Hello and welcome to Uncle Steve's Iron Maiden Zone. I'm your host, Uncle Steve, and I'm coming to you right now with a very special episode. On the line with me, I have all the way over in Los Angeles, California, I have Chip Ross. Chip, how are you, sir?
Whoa, thank you. Nice introduction. I'm great, Uncle Steve. Happy to be here.
Yeah, well, and the reason Chip is on with us doing this special episode is because if someone gets a great opportunity, you know, sometimes it's nice to talk to somebody. And I thought it would kind of equate a little bit because a while back, Kirsty was able to go see Paul Di'Anno on the first night of his tour. And Chip here has almost done something as cool because last night he got to go see the very first show. It was the surprise show, kind of a surprise, for Bruce Dickinson's Mandrake Project show. It was the very first one he's done at the Whiskey, right, in Los Angeles?
Yeah, Whiskey a Go-Go.
Yeah, and Chip didn't even know he was going to go, wasn't planning on going, and then last minute got a ticket for Saturday night. Then he double-checked and realized he bought a Friday night ticket. So you end up getting yourself an Uber or a Lyft, whatever, to the venue. What happens when you get to the venue?
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, you know, luckily it wasn't super crowded. It was sold out, of course. And by the way, the Whiskey A Go-Go where I went is a small place. So I don't know if people know about it or have been there, but if you see it on the movies and stuff, I got to say maybe it's 800 capacity, maybe 1,000. So anyway, no, I got in and everybody was actually very well behaved. They had a lot of security though, getting in.
Sure.
And basically, yeah, got in about an hour before the show started, about 9 o'clock. The show was going to start at 10, but people obviously had staked their ground on the general admission sort of standing room only floor.
Sure.
But yeah, I milled about. I looked at the shirts, which I sent you a picture of those, Uncle Steve. We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
I had a few drinks, set a tab down at the bar. And then, you know what? I don't know how interesting this is. I've talked to basically a couple of cool people before the show, and then about an hour into it, the show started. Mm-hmm. And so, do you want to talk? We can talk about the show, or I can talk about like just sort of the vibe before the show.
Yeah, but tell us that. You can tell it. I mean, you're speaking right now for 800 max, maybe people were there around the world. You know, and Maiden is a worldwide thing. So I'm sure there's a lot of people that would like to just hear, hey, yeah, what kind of vibe was there? What was it like being there?
Absolutely. Well, let me even back up before that, because I think a lot of people who follow, you know, Maiden News in depth knew or heard that Bruce was going to do a secret show Friday night at the Whiskey A Go-Go. And this came out a few days before. Mm-hmm. And they said you had to buy tickets at the box office, which I wasn't going to be able to go to the box office. Just didn't work at 10 a.m. on a Friday morning, blah, blah.
Well, did you hear about who was selling them at the box office?
Well, I saw the news, yes, afterward. Well, yes, and in the press release before, they said, you never know who may show at the box office. And, of course, yes, Sir Bruce, I don't know if he's a sir yet, Lord Bruce.
Yeah.
No, our friend Bruce Dickinson was in the box office, you know, mugging it up, doing sort of Bruce type stuff.
Right.
But obviously being cool. And look, this is all marketing the new album, the start of the tour. There's a lot of excitement and probably apprehension, or if that's the right word for it, on behalf of him and his team and the band, like, wow, we're going to actually do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this album is, you know better than me, Steve. How many years was this album in the making?
They said it was about 15 years. And on top of that, it's his first solo shows, like real first solo show since like 02 or 03 maybe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay.
So there, and then obviously this is a new configuration of the band, and of course it's even a newer configuration, right?
Right.
Now with the fill-in guitarists that are there. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a lot of nerves, and obviously they've been rehearsing and this. And so anyway, that show was supposed to happen Friday. I sort of wrote it off, I'm not going to go. And then I heard, oh, there's going to be a second show Saturday. I'm like, still great, but I'm not going to be able to make it down to the box office, you know, to buy the ticket.
Sure.
Well, then I happened to be on Instagram yesterday, randomly at work, in a meeting where I probably should have been focused. And I saw Bruce on Instagram, maybe from the Iron Maiden Instagram even, because I don't follow Bruce. So Iron Maiden is full in on promoting this, right? Which is
absolutely
cool. Yeah. We like that. They're not promoting Paul the same way, though. I think that's a shame, right? Could you imagine if the Iron Maiden social media profile started promoting all the Paul?
Oh, my gosh. I'm getting plenty of emails from Bandcamp or some bands on the thing telling me how great Paul sounds now.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Exactly,
Maybe. But anyway, so I saw this Instagram said you can buy tickets online, which just shocked me because I was like, let me go. And so I instantly took to my phone, put in my credit card, bought a ticket. I thought I was buying Saturday night. I didn't. I ended up buying Friday night. And luckily, I found that out once I got home. I was ready to settle in for the night.
Yeah.
I work at 5 a.m. every day. Friday's my night. You know, obviously, Friday and Saturday are like time to hang out, do whatever. So I'm like, Saturday will be the concert. Tonight, I'm going to unwind. Then I looked at my ticket and I was like, no, it's Friday. It's like 3 hours from now. So I rallied. It was fine.
Yeah.
Decided not to drive. It's a really cool drive here in LA from where I live in North Hollywood in the valley. Basically, you go over the canyon, Laurel Canyon,
yeah.
Where David Crosby and all those hippies lived back in the day. But you go through these windy roads. It's a fun drive. But I decided I'd rather just not trust myself to do that drive. And so I spent a lot of money on a Lyft.
Yeah.
But got there. The scene was good. I got to say most people were probably 40s, 30s, 40s, 50s. There was not probably no one surprised. There was not like a 20-year-old type crew. There were some, I would say. I mean, there's always Maiden fans who will find out. And yeah. Maiden has young fans, you know. When I saw Maiden here in LA, all generations, right? And there's a lot of 20-something-year-olds that are into Maiden, particularly being here in LA, you notice a lot of Hispanic or Latino kids grew up on Maiden. They love them.
Yeah.
And family. It's kind of like the Dodgers. Maiden. There's a few bands like that. So there's a few young people like that. For the most part, not. You also got the sense there was a lot of music journalists or industry people or friends of the band because many people had wristbands, which I did not. And also the crowd was very polite. I've been to the Whiskey several times, and usually it's not like wild like it was in 1987, but usually it's a little more of a pushy crowd, a little more arrogant, and you know, a little more whatever. Here, people were pretty polite. You can move through the crowd reasonably well. So that was good. And yeah, you got the vibe that there was a lot of friends of the band, friends of Bruce. And ultimately, I ended up finding out, yes, indeed, there were. And we can talk about who I met upstairs later.
Yeah, we will.
Watching over. But that's the thing I'll set the stage for. So the Whiskey is a big it's a main dance floor area with a disco ball and a band stage. Then up the stairs, there is a balcony area. All made of wood. It's not very fancy. It's not like an elegant theater. It's more like a big open room that they fashioned the second floor out of.
Okay.
You go up these wooden stairs, basically. And then up there is a VIP area with a rope where you had people sitting who could see over thing. And in that seated area were quite a few dignitaries of Maiden lore. No one from the band Iron Maiden, I will say, in case you wouldn't be asked that. I did not see anyone else from the band of Iron Maiden there. Not to say that maybe they were incognito or something like that, but I did see Rod Smallwood, the longtime manager, co-creator, I don't know what his titles are, for Iron Maiden.
Sure.
Creator of Sanctuary Records, I believe.
Yeah.
Been with the band. I think he retired himself at some point. I don't think there was a falling out, at least I don't know the whole history. We need Nesbitt to tell us that. But Rod Smallwood was there, and I recognized him. I knew he was by the way he was being treated and the way he sat, I knew he looked like, you know, an older British man. I'm like, that's so someone. Who is that? And then I remember from all the documentaries I've seen on Maiden.
Yeah.
Indeed. Oh, that is him. And I asked this guy next to him, so it was like a younger English guy, you know, just to make sure, like, oh, how is Rod doing? He's like, oh, he's all right, mate. He's fine. You know, totally English guy. And so then I knew it was Sir Rod Smallwood, and I fist bumped Rod Smallwood. And I said, you know, I forgot what I said to him at that point, but something really cool, you know, congratulatory. And then at the end of the night, Rod Smallwood, he's such a schmoozer. He was talking to everyone, and he was out front talking to like these young musician types, almost like he's going to sign them.
Right.
You know what I mean? He wasn't doing that, but that's just how he is. And his friends were trying to get him to go with them into the Uber to leave. Like, Rob, we got to go. And he's the oldest one there. You know, he's like 75 or something. He just didn't want to go. And I said to him at that point, I'm like, Rod, thank you for all that you've done. And he goes, oh, I haven't done much, mate. actually, that might not be his accent, but he had an accent for sure. And he said, like, I haven't done much, you know, basically meaning like the band did it, you know. Obviously, he knows talent work, but the man knows talent.
Yeah.
And what I thought was cool is, I don't know, is he managing Bruce? Do we know? Or was he just so interested in Bruce's career that he's at these opening shows.
No, I'm pretty sure he's been Bruce's manager. I'm pretty sure when Adrian left, he was Adrian's manager, and he's always been Maiden's. And I think that's part of the reason whenever they all came back together, he still had Bruce's ear, and he still had, you know, Steve's ear, of course, and he just makes things happen, so...
No doubt. Well, I thought it was great that he was there and, you know, obviously given his seal of approval, if you will. But he was sort of seated up on high, above the stage, watching things. And then I also saw Bruce's wife. I know you were very interested in the wedding coverage.
Was the grandmother there by chance?
I wanted to say, how is your grandmother? Like, I hope she's doing well. We know so much about
her. She made it to 104 yet.
Yeah. God bless her. I doubt she's ever going to leave Paris. But I didn't meet her, but I was within proximity of her, when I got into the area later. But yeah, man, so that's the stage. The last thing I'll say before the show is I bumped into a woman who seemed really cool, and she ended up being a chef who catered the food for the band and the sort of VIP area. And it was funny because I, like, this is before the show, I said, oh, excuse me, can I go behind, or past you to take a photo looking down? And she's like, wow, you have such polite manners. Like, I'm not used to that. I'm like, I'm like, really? So anyway, we start chatting, and Uncle Steve, I thought I was going to get married for a second. This woman was beautiful.
Yeah.
And oh my God. Like, and she would just, we just sort of like had a vibe and struck it up. And then she tells me she's the chef. And she's friends with Tanya, the bass player of the band, of Bruce's band.
Sure.
And she's also a vegan. And it was just really cool. But then later on, of course, the woman I met, Tara, ends up, of course, being deeply in love with a boyfriend she's had for years.
Oh, man.
But it was really cool. And I ended up chatting with her and the boyfriend for a while. I'm friends with them now, basically. And they were on the other side of the rope after the show, and basically at some point I kind of just scooched around the side and got myself into that area without any hassle. And that's where I was, in the area where Bruce was, where the band members were, all after the show, and there's a great vibe there. But yeah, no, it was such a fun night, and I have so many stories, and we'll talk about the music in the show itself, right?
Yeah, so you're kind of talking to people and having a good time. And about, so when the music, I remember, okay, last night, you were kind of messaging a little bit back and forth. And I remember, the thing I remember that kind of threw me, didn't throw me, it's just not what I would have expected, is you said, oh my gosh, Doctor is playing right now.
Mm-hmm. So, I was surprised too. I didn't know. Does he never do that? I know it's a Maiden, obviously we know it's a Maiden staple. But is that, that's not a Bruce thing?
I don't know what Bruce does solo. I haven't seen him in a solo show for 26 years, and I don't remember what it was then. So I just thought, okay, it makes sense, because that's probably, he's probably just like, let's just put Doctor on, and everyone will know what time it is,
I wonder. Now, the last thing I will say, there is a DJ, MC guy, at the Whiskey on Friday and Saturday nights, and he plays music leading up to almost like a radio show. You'll hear him cut in, like, hey, I'm going to play the new song from Judas Priest here, Panic in the Street, whatever that new song was.
Yeah.
And he played it. And so I wonder if he just had carte blanche to program whatever up until 10:01 p.m. or whatever. And he just decided to do that without the band knowing, or indeed. But that certainly got me going, because there was, like I said, there was music playing. The lights had kind of dimmed before, so you kind of didn't know when it was going to start. But the thing about the Whiskey is, it's not like let's just be clear, guys, and look at YouTube videos. This is not like a stage where they're going to come out from a curtain or they're going to come running out, This is a small, tiny stage. And to get to the stage, they have to walk down these stairs that are very visible. And so there basically is an area above, that sort of plank area, deck area, let's call it, where the VIP area is. And then there's a back room. They come out of that back room, and then you see them at the top of the stairs, and you see them one by one go down these wooden stairs, plug in their instruments, and then basically start playing. There's no mystery. There's no, smoke.
when do they got to come out kind of thing. Yeah.
Exactly. So you know they're coming out, but the music kind of, I think, got the crowd ready to be like, okay, now let's go where we're going to go, and then we'll watch them come down the stairs and come in.
Right.
And so that's kind of how it happens. And yeah, you know, it then basically it was a great show. And obviously, I'll take your lead on how much you want to talk about the set lists. But I will say they played 15 songs. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Doctor started the whole thing. How about this? They also, according to setlist.com, they say they started with Toltec 7 Arrival.
Okay.
I didn't recognize that little bit. I know that's an intro, right?
It's a little intro on Accident of Birth that leads into Star Children.
Gotcha. Well, they didn't play Star Children as the first song, but I would have liked it if they did.
Oh, man.
But anyway, we'll talk about the set list if you want, but just they started, the lights went down. It's just a raw performance because there isn't a lot of room for them to do crazy stuff on stage.
So you're saying Bruce didn't have any wardrobe changes or anything?
No, that's another point. Yeah. Where would he go to do it?
Right.
You know,
right.
They'd have to put like a shower curtain around.
Right.
Now, I'd love to see Alice Cooper at a place like that, because I bet he would find out a way to still do his theatrical show.
Yeah.
It would be like an old school magician show, but he would find a way to use that stage, you know, somehow. But anyway, no, this was definitely that. And obviously, you know, I'm part of the select few who saw the first show of this tour, and they kept calling it what do they call themselves?
The House Band of Hell. Yeah.
So they kept calling themselves that. And that's the other thing, by the way. When you went to buy this ticket, you couldn't search Bruce Dickinson on the ticket web. You had to search House Band from Hell.
That's funny.
Is it funny?
That's cool, really. I mean,
okay, I was going to ask you, what do you think about the branding of the Bruce?
I think it's pretty cool because it's only going to be like that for a couple of shows because, you know, There's the famous stories of back in the day where Maiden would play like a secret show, and one of them, I can't remember what a lot of them were, but one that pops out in my head is Charlotte and the Harlots and stuff. You know, something where it's an obvious tie to them. But the House Band of Hell, that might have had something to do with something off of his new album.
Did they call themselves the Gom Jabbar ever?
I'm sure
the Kiwatz Hadarach.
Yeah, I'm sure Matt would appreciate that, but
and our friend Dina, of course.
Oh, of course,
So it says they started Toltec 7 Arrival, and they probably did, but I just didn't recognize it. Honestly, that's the time when you're watching them come down the stairs. If that happened,
yeah, and that just would have been an audio. It wouldn't have been anything.
Of course, that's what I've been like. It didn't stand out to me like Doctor did as like a piece of audio.
I could see that happening. It does fit for that. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, and so they did 13 songs, and then they did two songs in an encore. And, of course, with an encore, they don't really go away too much.
Sure.
I do think they ascend the stairs, if I remember correctly. Yeah, a lot of times they'll go up the stairs, and they'll drink, like, water and stuff, and then they'll come back down. And then they played two songs. But what would you like to know about the set list?
You can say whatever you like, because, I mean, I think you even said that there's a rumor that tonight's set list is going to be different. It's not going to be – I'm sure there'll be some of the same stuff, but not the whole thing.
Right. So you're a person who, if you're going to go see Bruce – and are you going to see Bruce? Do you have a ticket?
I have no – he's not coming anywhere near me, and at least as of right now. And, you know, it is what it is. I kind of saw – someone posted something somewhere, and I just glanced at it, and I was like, oh, okay, that's an interesting set list. So,
Okay, yeah. And by the way, I wanted to see the set list just to be better prepared for Bruce, because I was not the biggest Bruce fan. Like,
right.
I could name any Iron Maiden song they're going to play, unless it's a deep cut from Virtual 11. I would know within the first few seconds what song it was.
Right.
And I don't have that same frame of reference for Bruce.
Sure.
But
sure.
I wanted to make sure that whatever I saw, I didn't kick myself later going, oh my God, I can't believe I heard him play whatever that all the fans think is like the rarest song of all time. And so I managed to look at the set list. Somebody had posted it hours before somehow on setlist.fm, and it ended up being correct.
That is bizarre to me.
Well, here's what I think happened. Because I also saw on Instagram or Twitter, somebody sent me like a photo someone took of like a printed out set list, you know, kind they put on the stage.
I saw that too.
So I think what happened was early in the day, as they're setting things up or running through things, somebody took a picture of that. And maybe that list is available for the drum tech or whoever has to do whatever, the lighting people.
Yeah.
It's there. Someone took a picture of it hours early. It got out. But I will say our friend of the show, Luis, knew the set list himself. And he was talking on Twitter, X, whatever we're going to call it, that he knew the set list. And he's like, it will not disappoint. And this was before I saw it on setlist.fm. So at first I thought he leaked it. But no, I think he just knew. And he's got good friends. And he's very well connected, I believe, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He is.
He knows people. I don't know who he knows, but he knows people. So anyway, the set list was out. And you're right. So this won't be a spoiler for people going to see the show in whatever city they're going to see it, most likely. Although I bet some of these will, of course, come through. But yeah, they started with the song Accident of Birth, which is
very
a great
cool.
song.
Very cool, yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. We can go through it in a second, but let me give the highlights maybe for the group. Yeah. The people who want to know the questions. How many songs did they play from the Mandrake Project? How many do you think they played, Steve? Or would you have a guess, or do you know?
I've looked through the set list, and I saw it somewhere, and I don't I got really, it. I just glanced at it, but I could swear I remember reading somebody say, I'm surprised they only played two songs. Is that all they played?
Four.
Four, okay.
Yeah, no, it was someone in our group. It was Sir Lord Andrew, I think, said when he saw the set list, he was surprised there was only four songs. And so those four songs were the two singles, Afterglow of Ragnarok, Reign of the Graves. I really love Reign of the Graves, by the way. That's the one you guys had a little bit of a conversation about that I think Matt didn't like it originally, then he got so into it. Or maybe that was you, but it's an unusual song, but that riff is so good. And one of my videos I put up, it has that riff, and it's just so driving.
Sure.
Love Reign of the Graves. Many Doors to Hell, that was the final song of the night. No, that was not the final song. Many Roads, Doors to Hell was the song that he played, and he banter before that song. He talked about music journalists being in the house.
Oh, yeah. Basically, I didn't see that. You sent that
you
over.
See that?
I saw
yes.
that. Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah. And he said, you know, oh, there's many music journalists here, and you can find them easily because they have pointy tails and little red horns. And then he made a segue into the song Many Doors to Hell.
Yeah,
that's where they belong, I suppose. I don't know what's up with that, Bruce.
Does
he not like the media? Or he's just nervous about it and he's trying to be cool. And then the other song, which I think is a highlight, and many fans of the Mandrake Project wanted to know if they were going to play this song, and they did. Mm-hmm. Resurrection Men.
Yeah, yeah.
With the acoustics. It definitely is a sonic journey. I think they pulled it off really well. I can only imagine, you know, they'll get tighter and tighter because there's a little bit of changes in that song, you know?
Sure, sure.
But no, it sounded great. The whole Quentin Tarantino Western vibe was beautiful.
Yeah.
So they played four songs from that. That's the most from any other albums, but they played three songs from three other albums.
Yeah. They didn't play anything from Tattooed Millionaire, and I saw it. I saw that they didn't play anything from their Skunk Works album either, from the Skunk Works album.
But would it surprise people, you fans, that they played three songs from Balls to Picasso?
You know, that would surprise me, honestly.
They did.
Sounds like you're saying they did. I mean, they obviously did. Tears of the Dragon.
Yes.
What else did they play? You want me to guess? Okay.
I want you to guess.
I'm trying to think of what would be normal to play. Like Cyclops? Did they play Cyclops?
Mm-mm. No.
Gods of War?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay. They didn't do Sacred Cowboys, did they?
They did not.
Oh, that would have been a great one.
Gods of War, supposedly, was the first live performance since 1995 was the Gods of War performance,
According
to Setlist. First performance since 95. What else do you think it was?
I remember now. I saw it. Was it Laughing in the Hiding Bush? Is that what it was?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, okay.
I like that song. I didn't really know that album well, but it came across very well. It was in between Abduction, which they've never played live, apparently.
Yeah.
And Afterglow of Ragnarok, which, of course, being new, they have not played live before.
Sure.
So the first four songs were Accident of Birth, Abduction, Laughing in the Hiding Bush, Afterglow of Ragnarok, and then number five, Chemical Wedding.
Ooh,
it was great. It's first live performance since 1999, according to this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's so many of these things that he's just never – because you figure he's only – I mean, like I said, the last tour was in like – 2002 and that tour was only, I mean, it was a small tour. It wasn't like he played 50 dates I'm pretty sure it was just like a few random festivals here and there.
But what was the set list? Was it mostly that album at the time, Tyranny of Souls?
What was it? I don't even remember, but I do know, like, Chris Dale, who was the bassist on the Skunk Works band, I know he was playing with them, and I know that they did. I'm guessing it would have been Chris Dale and Roy Z and Eddie Casillas, who was his bass player for a bunch of his solo stuff, and I can't remember the drummer's name, but I know they played some Skunk Works, at least one or two Skunk Works songs in that show, so...
Got it. Well, nothing from Skunk Works in this show.
I know. That kind of sucks for me.
But one song from Tyranny of Souls, and we talked about that, Abduction. So the last time it sounds like they did not play Abduction on that tour of that album. So interestingly enough, very, very limited representation of that album for what it's worth.
Yeah.
Chemical Wedding. Now, let me ask you, I don't know the music as well. Is there a reprieve of Chemical Wedding in the song Alchemist?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, good. Because that happened near the end. And at first I was like, wait, are they playing Chemical Wedding again? But then I realized they were playing The Alchemist, which from the same album.
Yeah.
And that wasn't something they just put in there. That is on the record, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is.
Awesome. So, okay. Then after Chemical Wedding, he said, you know, music journalists are basically devils, and they played Many Doors to Hell, the live debut of that. Then at that point, I was upstairs, by the way. That's when I found out the woman who I thought I would marry was already with someone else.
Yeah.
But she still was cool, and the dude was cool. And like I said, we both like Deftones, me and that guy. He had a Deftones t-shirt on.
Okay.
And I just saw Deftones, and I don't think they're one of your bands, Uncle Steve. But for those of who do like them, they were at Coachella, and I watched their live stream before I left to go see Bruce. And it was such a fun night because, you know, like I said, I work 5 a.m. So me getting off on a Friday afternoon, start to drink a few beers, listen to the Deftones, get geared up to go down to see Bruce. I'm feeling pretty good about my life at that point. And that's why I decided not to drive, because it was like, I'm having too good of a day.
Sure.
I don't need to wreck my life by like anything to happen. I look, worst case, like, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But even like, you know, hit a squirrel on the cat. But so, okay, then they played. So I went downstairs at this point to the bathroom, and that's where I took some of the videos kind of outside that area, kind of by the mixing board area. And that's where I saw them do Tears of the Dragon.
Okay, yeah.
And I really like that song.
He sounded good, too.
Dude, and yes, and the crowd seemed to know that song.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely, if in his catalog, if you were to pick one song to represent his catalog, like, that's the song.
I'm surprised he didn't encore that. Yeah, I bet he will at the shows you see.
Yeah, I thought it would have been, it seems like it would be an encore, but I mean, I like that he threw it into the set in the middle somewhere. That's pretty
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, in between two new songs, Many Doors to Hell and Resurrection Men. So from Tears of the Dragon, which had a great audience sing-along part, that's where I was impressed, because like I said, there was quite a few, you know, Los Angeles has a more casual people, right, when they go to shows sometimes.
Sure,
they're not
sure.
Passionate, especially if it's, you're an industry person and you get free tickets and free events, you're not going to be as wild. And also, look, let's face it, people in their 40s, 50s, but I was thinking there wasn't a lot of sing-along until this song, and then I realized they know his catalog. This isn't just like, you know, Mandrake. This isn't just new fans, too, like me, you know, bandwagoning like on the Mandrake passion that you guys have had, made me kind of reassess, you know, the Bruce catalog. And honestly, you know, going back, the reason I started reassessing his catalog was an episode you did about a year ago for the Accident at Birth album.
Yeah, that's and my I was favorite.
Like, wow. And you said that, and you said, like, you liked it, I believe you said, and correct me if I'm wrong, you liked it better than some Maiden album.
Oh, yeah. I would say I like that over, I can't even think about it right now, but I'll just go on a limb and I'll say I probably like that better than at least 7 Iron Maiden albums.
Including Bruce albums.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I know the two you might be thinking of, or one at least, or two that you might be thinking of.
There's more than one Bruce album I'm talking about. And I'm not... hey, let me say it like this. There's albums that Bruce sang on outside of No Prayer and
Fear of the Dark
that I would put it over.
Interesting.
I might even put it over a classic era album.
Well, I know which one you would do.
Yeah.
But would you put it over a reunion album?
Oh, yeah. I would put it over... I mean, if I was just going really, really fast, I might would say I'd put it over Dance of Death, and I might would put it over Book of Souls. Yeah, I might put it over Final Frontier.
Wow, Kirsty will be very shocked to hear that.
And I like, you know, but that's not to say those are bad albums. I mean, that's but what that is.
But
say,
Accident of Birth is so good.
Accident of Birth is just an amazing album.
Mm. Well, I wish they would have played Taking the Queen.
Oh man.
According to Luis, he thinks they might play it tonight, Saturday night, as of this taping. And again, all of our fans can easily find these videos probably on YouTube. What I would do is search Bruce Whiskey. And by the way, the way Whiskey is spelled is without an E, which is the Scotch or Irish version. Uncle or Lord Steve will have, Lord Andrew will have to correct me on that. But Whiskey, type in Bruce Whiskey and then like 4/13/2024, and you'll probably find all
the band stuff. Of the what was it called, the Band of Hell or whatever it's called,
the House Band from Hell.
House Band from Hell.
Yes, and what? Okay, let's stop the press for a second here. And too bad we can't show this, but I shared with you the shirts for the merchandise.
Yeah.
And with the channel too. So and all our Patreons will be able to see that in the Twitter channel. But you had a strong reaction to that. So can you tell us about your reaction?
Yeah. I'm going to pull it up on my phone here.
I burned those pictures now.
I remember that last night you sent it to me, and I do appreciate your offer. You offered to pick me one of these shirts up.
Absolutely.
As soon as I looked at it, I just thought, you know, I'm as a guy my age, I'm like, there's nowhere that I would wear this shirt. Like, I was like, when I saw it, I was like, where would I... In my mind, literally, I thought, where could I wear this shirt? There's nowhere I could wear this shirt. Okay, I'm trying to find it.
I have it pulled up here, and it's a weird, because the front and back are strange, and they almost don't seem like the same shirt. That's for starters.
So that's the one thing, yeah. Was that front and back of a shirt, or was that two separate shirts?
No, it's front and back. And so the front, is that a pentagram or a mandrake symbol?
Yeah, it looks like the pentagram.
And that's from what? What is that from the Mandrake?
That I've never seen that in any Bruce stuff. It's just because it looks like in all intents and purposes, it looks like it's perfectly. It looks like it was done on purpose. If you zoom in really good on it,
yes,
you can tell that there's eyes and a nose, a goat. And all that. So it's like, I think they just did it on purpose because it's literally. And on the shirt it says, I sell my soul for rock and roll. I was a little interested that they used that phrase because that's, you know, there's a Black Sabbath greatest hits album called We Sold Our Souls for Rock and Roll. And there's obviously a, you know, tie there with them. And then the shirt next to it says the House Band of Hell. And it just has the two dates on it, which I think is pretty cool.
That's not the shirt next to it. That's the back.
Okay. Wait a minute. Then what's the shirt? I didn't get that then.
The front is the one you're showing. We talked about the one that says for two nights only. Then the back of that shirt has the House Band of Hell.
Yeah. What's the other shirt? I didn't see the other shirt.
Oh, there isn't another shirt. There's only one shirt.
Oh, okay.
That was my point. Like, it almost seems like two different shirts when you look at them.
Yeah.
It's a weird combination, I think, of two messages, which are kind of individually interesting, but to have them front and back just seems like a weird shirt to me. So I agree with you. Like, when you say there's no place I could wear this.
Yeah.
Yeah. The back is kind of, you know, a lot going on, but this also speaks to what you were saying, that it looks like for only two nights only, they're going to be calling themselves this. So in some ways, some fan would probably find this to be a collector's item.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And he signed it. That's Bruce's sort of scribble, I suppose, in the front. So I thought, you know, let's see. But then, you know what? Let's not speak ill of Bruce, but they were not flying off the shelves.
I could see getting it only for that collector's thing. And I'll be honest, I mean, I do a podcast. I love Iron Maiden, but I'm also not one of those guys that feels like I have to own everything that they put out, or, you know, every colored vinyl or whatever. But yeah, I saw this and I just was, even my daughter looked at it and she just goes, is that like, and my daughter's 17. She goes, is that like it's a big pentagram? And I was like, yeah. And I could see wearing something like this if I was her age. It's controversial, but when you're 17 or 18, you don't really care. But even in that, I don't remember ever having any. The closest thing I ever had was, I remember, and you might remember this, is back in 1988, there was this artist named King Diamond. And,
of course.
And he was a professed Satanist. And I remember he was on the Geraldo Rivera show. that they were doing about artists that were Satanist. And I remember I went and saw him within a few days of that. And I remember I was like, I'm wearing my King Diamond shirt to school tomorrow. And people were like, is that the guy that was on Geraldo last night? I'm like, yeah, yeah.
That's like, awesome.
It was funny.
I love King Diamond, by the way. I've been lucky to, you know, he had that heart attack and all that. And yeah. I never saw him like when you did back in the day. Mm-hmm. I should have. And so I thought I'd never get to see him. And then he finally came back. This is, you know, 2016, 15. I got to see him twice.
Oh, cool.
And so I was very happy to that. And I saw him also with Merciful Fate a year or so ago. But I think you and I both agree that we like the King Diamond music better than the Merciful Fate music.
Definitely. Now, I did see Merciful Fate once too, but I just, I didn't find their music as intriguing and adventurous as King Diamond's, you know. And I was lucky. Well, King Diamond's is more progressive, right. And there's just a lot of...
No, it's a good word. I agree with you.
But I saw him on the tour for Them, and I saw him on the tour two nights on the tour for Conspiracy.
Let's see. Wow. Yeah, I would have loved, that would have been the heyday. I've seen some bootlegs of that in the Abigail era. And this is a sidetrack, but I'll never forget the first time I saw King Diamond on Headbangers Ball. The video showed up.
Yeah.
1987. My sister and I both saw it at the same time, and we just burst out laughing because we caught it like mid-video.
Yeah.
And his face is filling the screen.
Oh, yeah.
He's screaming, and we're like, and I believe. Remember the metal magazines? Mm-hmm. We had, you know, read all those, and I think I had seen his face like a week or two before in the magazines, like you saw Geraldo in a way. Mm-hmm. And then I happened to see the video just come on, and we were just like, thought it was the funniest thing we had ever seen in our lives.
Ridiculous back then, yeah.
Oh, I mean, then the music came and it was not good. But speaking of theatrical, let's get back to Bruce, right?
Yeah, because
after Resurrection Men, they played a very theatrical song, okay. Rain on the Graves.
Okay.
Which I love. What is your feeling on Rain on the Graves?
I didn't really care too much for the way he did. Like, the chorus is really good, but I didn't care too much for the way the verses, I guess, are delivered.
It's almost like a rap, you mean? It's like talking, like a...
Yeah, it's just more... Right, yeah. It just, it comes off a little... One person said they thought it was a little comedic, and I don't go that far with it, but I just didn't like the way it was delivered.
Yeah, it's a good song live because you're kind of stomping your feet at that part,
sure.
Which is cool.
Yeah. It almost sounds like a weird nursery rhyme.
Or like something you'd hear like in a church, you know, like a...
Could be.
Yeah, you know, it has a gospel-y kind of thing. But I think actually it's good to have that after Resurrection Men. I think that's good concert. Actually, let me just... Those three songs. Tears of the Dragon, Resurrection Men, Reign of the Graves. That's a solid song set.
Sure.
In the middle of it, that was really damn impressive. Really damn impressive.
Yeah.
And really, really great. And so Rain on the Graves, I really liked that song. Liked it more than I saw live. I think if you guys end up seeing it, you know, those who listen in a theater or a larger stage where they have lights and smoke and things, I can imagine it being really a highlight of the night.
Oh, yeah.
So they're going to throw all the money that they have at that performance and probably Afterglow of Ragnarok, you know,
yeah, sure.
As well, both being just huge. I mean, Chemical Wedding, maybe they'll have a fake wedding in the middle of the performance. I mean, this is Bruce after all. He loves you know, and you can't do that stuff at the Whiskey. The Whiskey is raw. That's why these artists do it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Def Leppard and Motley Crue did a show a year or two ago at the Whiskey, and it was broadcast on Sirius Radio. And that was a big thing, that the fact that they were playing this little place, you know.
Yeah.
And so they all do it. And by the way, just for the fans to know, Whiskey A Go Go is next door to the Rainbow. Are you familiar with the Rainbow?
Is that
documentary?
Is that the place where Lemmy hung out?
Yes, it is. And not just Lemmy, way before Lemmy, John Lennon, Alice Cooper.
Oh, yeah.
Had that band where they're all drunk together.
Yeah, the Hollywood Vampires.
Yeah, and who was the other guy? He died in a car crash, and he's like a really renowned singer. Harry Chapin?
Oh, yeah, Harry Chapin, yeah.
Was he one of those guys? I think
he's the Cats in the Cradle guy.
Yeah, I think he's one of those guys too. But anyway, that place, the Rainbow, is next door. And so that little strip of Sunset Boulevard, West Hollywood, is the only remaining strip that you can feel any kind of vibe from like the 80s hair metal scene.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, it's great, of course. But in a way, it's also kind of like you're going to the to exhibit in a museum, because it's not real. You're right. Let's be fair. That is the passion of the streets these days, and the passion of the teens isn't that hair metal. The people fueling that block are like people who go to Disneyland or Epcot Center to experience what it's like to go to France. They're trying to release stuff, and we're keeping it alive. And I love that era.
That's cool.
I'm under no illusion that it still exists to this day.
Yeah.
But you can go. But my point is, if you're in LA and you decide to go to the Rainbow and the Whiskey on any night, you can feed that nostalgia pretty well and just kind of lose yourself in it. It doesn't have to be a night when someone as big as Bruce Dickinson is playing, by the way.
Sure, sure. So
every night of the week, they have hair metal bands playing there. And a lot of them are kind of goofy or gag, you know, like fake ones. But then this Sunday, they're having like a big party at the Rainbow with Slaughter and... Oh, I'll find the No, I got it wrong. Sebastian Bach, not Slaughter. Slaughter's playing at the Whiskey at a show later on that they were playing. But yes, the Rainbow is another cool place to go. And you and I are, neither of us are big fans of Lemmy's contribution to music. But there is a statue of Lemmy outside.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
And it smokes a cigarette. So people always put a lit cigarette in his hand. And it's like the eternal flame.
That's funny.
Yeah, that's man. Funny. So anyway, you can kind of get lost in that and have that whole experience. And that's why it's so fun to go. But yeah, those three songs, Tears of Dragon, Resurrection Man, Reign of the Graves, kind of ended a big chunk of it. And then they did a cover song. And I think this gave Bruce time to maybe chill out and relax for a little bit, because it was an instrumental cover song.
Okay.
Before we get into that, let me ask you this. Would you have thought they would have played any Iron Maiden song during this show?
No, I wouldn't have thought that at all.
And they did not.
Yeah.
I was not surprised either. A couple people I talked to thought, oh, of course they're going to. And I said,
no way. Bullshit. I would be, if I was a fan going to that, I would be very disappointed, because Iron Maiden tours incessantly. The only way I would want to hear anything by Maiden is if it was a very deep cut song that Bruce wrote that had never been touched live.
Yes. Yes. I don't know which one that would be, but I totally get that.
Yeah.
Maybe something off of, well, I don't know.
Maybe Empire of the Clouds.
stripped down version, not the whole 60. Yeah, I'd be mad if I went to a show and I got an 18-minute bat at a Bruce Dickinson show. I'd be like, okay, like, can we get like?
Yeah, you could hear 5 or 6 songs in that time.
Can I get some of that vegan food you guys got upstairs? sit down and have a meal.
Right.
Yeah, the Rainbow Bar and Grill is having a 52nd anniversary party in the parking lot this Sunday with Sebastian Bach, Faster Pussycat, Power Man 5000, Shark Island, Donnie V, and some other bands I don't know.
Go ahead.
What were you going to say?
No, I said Donnie V is from, he's from Enough's Enough.
Oh, but he's not Chips Enough, my namesake.
Yeah, Donnie V, I want to say, I'm not super hip on them, but I think he was maybe one of the, I think he might have been the original singer.
Excellent. They're a band, just Enough's Enough, that some people say should have been a bigger band. I don't know about that.
I've heard a lot of people say that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, so they didn't, back to the thing. Do you know what the cover song was? Have you looked up what cover song that the Maiden band, or sorry, the Bruce band performed last night?
I saw the set list, but I don't recall seeing, I skimmed it really quickly.
Gotcha.
So I don't know what it was.
It was the Edgar Winter Group's Frankenstein.
Oh, okay. I do remember seeing Frankenstein there, and I kind of thought, oh, what was that? Okay. But yeah, exactly. I know exactly which song you're talking about. Yeah.
Well, that was a good song, but also I think a chance for Bruce, who had just done three amazing, 9 songs up to that point, but just 3 killer vocal performances, you know, and needs the rest. And the band, let's frank, are younger than him, and they can jam out during that session, and they certainly did. And I don't know if you want to talk about the band at this point, but they were very talented. Obviously, we're not with Roy Z, right?
Yeah, Roy Z, unfortunately, isn't there. No, I'll be honest, man.
But folks that we knew were going
to... Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I kind of lost you for a second there.
Yeah, that's okay. I didn't think you were talking. So go ahead. That's okay. Go ahead.
No, I said, I'm actually going to make sure I know the name of the band members, because I want to make sure I give them all the proper credit. Of course, the bass player, Tanya, is well known, stands out in the videos, and she was there and doing a great job. You know, bass is a very important part of all of Bruce's music.
Yes.
And I think Steve Harris has a lot to do with that. And so when you're going from Steve Harris to another bassist, and I don't know who the bassists were in the other Bruce albums, mm-hmm. but she is fantastic. And I want to make sure I have her name, her full name here. Look it up, unless you know it.
I do not know it. I'm not an expert on these things.
I know. Right. It's one of those things. But I'll find it. But her name is Tanya, and she is a great musician and really into it. And I think she lives in L.A., and apparently she's also the bass player for Whitesnake at this time.
I think I read that, yeah.
Yeah, I saw her Instagram that she was with David Coverdale and people like that. So she's great. And then, of course, we have here we go, Tanya O'Callaghan, and she is an Irish lass, and she has a nice Irish accent. And when I talked to her, she was Irish. Cool. And then I met the keyboard player. Now he told me his name was Giuseppe, but is he not Mysteria?
Yeah, that,
and I don't
I
know
think
who Mysteria is.
But I think that's who that is. Yeah,
that's him. Okay, he's cool. Now that dude. When I met him upstairs, he said his name was Giuseppe, so I assume an Italian gentleman, has an accent, nice guy.
Okay.
But he is quite a performer and quite a fun to watch on stage because, you know, he's going between playing keyboards to playing the guitar. Mm-hmm. And you know what the guitar is?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, it's a very 80s sort of thing. And Lady Gaga used to play one, too. It's very standout. I think I took a couple pictures of him jamming on that. And then I think he also plays guitar at times, too. So he's really just multi-talented, right?
Okay.
And I can only imagine with him and Roy Z together, they make great sounds, right? And that's why that's great. That's why they took two guitar players to fill in for Roy Z, Chris DeClercq and Philip Naslund.
Okay.
Don't know anything about those guys, but I will say Chris is the one that's on the left of the stage, and he's a left-handed guitarist, if you see the video.
Yeah, I saw that.
Tall guy. He's playing a left-handed Fender Strat. He got the flashy guitar parts. Like, you could tell he was doing the stuff that was, like, finger-stretching, you know, shredding-type stuff. Okay. And the other guy, Philip Naslund, I assume is more of a rhythmist-type person. He may have also been the one who played the acoustic sections, if I remember correctly, in Resurrection Man. And then the drummer, I don't know anything about him, but he was great, Dave Moreno.
Okay.
Apparently he's been in some other bands because he has a Wikipedia. Oh, my friends, he was best known as the drummer of Puddle of Mud.
Ah, okay, okay.
How about that?
Yeah.
So that's the band, and of course, Sir Bruce, right, himself. And he was in fine form. So after Frankenstein, they came back for three more songs before the encore, and that was Gods of War. Mm-hmm. We talked about that being the first live performance of that since 95.
Yeah.
Then The Alchemist, which has a reprieve of Chemical Wedding.
Right.
That one mm-hmm. Well, people were definitely, that was the part he definitely had the crowd kind of like chanting with.
Sure.
And then the final song of the set, he did a little bit of banter talking about astrology and this is what he said. He said, yes, something about how this place, the Whiskey A Go Go, was part of the Age of Aquarius in the hippie era. Uh-huh. And he said, but there is a dark side.
Oh, man.
By the way, Bruce was not as bantery as I expected him to be. I expected him to be full unleashed Bruce. Yeah. And look, we both love the man, but hopefully we can all make some jokes about him and say he sometimes can't read a room.
You know, he might have been, I think it might have been that it was opening night and he doesn't seem like he would be the kind of guy that would be nervous at all, but maybe he was just kind of like toning down just a little bit for the opening night.
I wonder, we'll have to see in the next two nights. So he's playing tonight again at the Whiskey, then Monday night in Anaheim.
Yeah.
By the time, you know, I don't know when people hear this, those already happened and all the videos will be up on YouTube. But I think he'll loosen up a little bit and he'll probably, my guess is when he goes to Anaheim, he'll make a joke about having been up here or something. You're like, those LA people, they're so strange. You know, I was on Wacky Hollywood Boulevard. Actually, it's Sunset Boulevard. Oh, whatever. Cool. So Dark Side of Aquarius ended the main set.
Nice.
And again, this whole thing probably was a good had to be 2 hours. Yeah. I didn't leave there until like 12:30.
Okay.
I bet it ended around 11:45. So maybe it was a good hour and 45 minutes of performances, but I didn't feel cheated. Like, it felt like they're giving a lot of performance, a lot of music to you.
Yeah. Good deal.
Solid show, a lot of music, went from the whole catalog. Every artist, every band member kind of got a chance to sign. There was no like bass solo or guitar solo or any of those types of moments. It was just straight music, but they still had their chances to shine.
Cool.
And they came back with Jerusalem.
Did they play? They played Jerusalem. Wow.
That was the first song of the encore.
Okay.
Which I thought should have been the ending maybe, but they played it as the first song of the encore. It was the first performance of that since 1999, apparently.
Yes. That's nice.
And then they played final song of the night, Road to Hell.
Right. Yeah.
Now it has kind of a sing-along part to it, right?
Yeah. It's a...
not your favorite?
It's a favorite of a lot of people because it's a song that was co-written with Adrian Smith.
It definitely has that Adrian vibe. Yeah.
It's not a bad song. I just never loved it. So.
Mm.
It'd be cool to hear live though.
Oh yeah, no, and it was, and I think it was a great way to kind of wind down the night. You know, it's not the rockinest of songs. He doesn't have to run around. Not that you can run around far on the stage, but he doesn't run around too much.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I'm looking at set list now. It's 4 p.m. on Saturday to see if the set list for tonight was somehow already leaked, and it has not been.
Not updated.
But I'll be very curious to see that. But yeah, man, so then that's the end of the show. And by the way, near the end of the show, I was upstairs again, and that's when I realized, you know, Rod Smallwood's there sitting down.
Sure.
When I fist bumped him during that point. And that's when I realized this blonde woman in the leather. You know the movie Grease? The original Grease?
Yeah.
When Olivia Newton-John becomes, you know, the leather girl at the very end. Like a sleeveless leather one piece. She's kind of wearing that. But with like either pearls wrapped around her waist, sort of like as a belt type thingy.
Interesting.
Yes. Well, yes, of course. And she's blonde. I guess for some reason I thought she was, I don't know why I thought she was a brunette, but she's blonde and she seems very nice.
Yeah.
I didn't speak with her, but I think she's probably maybe a few years older than we are, maybe mid-50s or so.
Gotcha.
Or maybe she's younger than that. You know, I don't know. Well,
you never can tell.
Bruce himself, I think, is what, 65 now, right?
Born in a mining town at 58. That would make him 66 this year.
Well, his birthday's in August.
Okay, yeah, so he's 65.
He and you, Uncle Steve, are both Leos, so I think that's why you guys sniff around each other a bit. Why you didn't vibe with him at the book signing or the
one man show or whatever it was.
Yes. So then, you know, I ended up talking to my friends I had met, the chef of the vegan restaurant and her boyfriend, husband. Mm-hmm. Love rival, and they were backstage. They were at the other side of this rope area where basically people were milling around. There was some food. At that point, Bruce had not come out of the dressing room, but I did see he put some Instagrams up right after that, you know, and said, "Oh, we just did it." But at that time, some of the other musicians were out. And I ended up kind of like walking into that area, just kind of scooching past this barrier with the permission of the people I knew already. Mm-hmm. And that's when I was in the sort of the VIP area, basically. And that's when I talked with the band members, Giuseppe, the Mysteria, as we call him, keyboard player, Chris DeClercq. And I basically told him, you know, I didn't know a lot about him. I said, wow, man, I actually asked all of them the same question. I'm like, wow, how excited are you to like get going? They're like, oh, and all of them were like, we can't wait. Like, and when I talked to Tanya O'Callaghan, I'm like, you must be so excited to like have your first night. She's like, oh yeah, you know, just tell me where to play and I'll play.
Exactly.
Like, that was her attitude. And it's like, that's what a professional musician is, obviously. And that's how they're wired.
Mm-hmm.
And if there were nerves, they're like athletes. I want to play the next game.
Yeah.
I mean, I might be tired, but I want to play the next game because I bet I could even do better. Or I want to recapture what I had just now, like that high that I have, and especially a first night. And obviously they had friends and family around them, you know, upstairs. And you got that vibe very much so, that there was friends and family. I talked to one guy, I don't remember his name, who apparently he's had Bruce at his house several times.
Okay.
Bruce knows the guy's children, really close friend. And all that. And here's the thing, and I want to leave this up to you and your audience to also weigh in on this.
Okay.
Would you have done differently than what I have done? So I had the chance to meet Bruce and maybe ask for a picture. He was there in the vicinity. I saw him come out of the dressing room, talk to his wife, talk with people. He's just doing stuff. And then I did see people come up to him, ask him for photos.
Yeah.
I did not do that.
Sure.
Will I regret that I did not do that?
You know, sometimes I feel, I guess it just depends on the kind of person you are. Cause it's like being a, you're the fan that collects everything and has to always get everything signed and all this kind of stuff. Are you the kind of fan that just wants to say, hey, I was there. I had a moment. It was cool. I mean, I'm more of a, I would like to get a picture, but at the same time, if I feel like it's kind of like you said, that thing Bruce doesn't know how to do sometimes, reading a room. And I feel like it's like, it's a small little gathering and it, you know, I guess it depends. You just gotta, if you can find the right moment to go, Bruce, can I just get a quick pic real fast? You know, it's, but at the same time, if you don't, you had those moments, you know, that you,
yeah. What's the value of the moment? Now, I think with you, there's a little bit more of a pressure perhaps because you host this podcast and people all over the world will Google Iron Maiden and find you. And I think also those who follow you, I would expect Uncle Steve to have a picture, but I would understand if you didn't want to as well.
I'd love to, you know, I mean, I would love to have the opportunity, but
100%. I did not do it. And again, and I also did not go up to him and be like, hey, man, you know, all the things, wonderful things I could say. I'm not making fun of people who would have things to say. I think we'd all have good things to say. In a way, where do you even start, right?
Right,
yeah. So I didn't, but here's what I did do, which is sort of, I don't know. I think also he probably sensed from me that he probably thought I was a music journalist. I have that vibe, I think.
Okay.
You know, short hair. I don't look like I.
You didn't have your credentials with you.
No, the hat with the press thing sticking out. No, they don't give you those anymore. And I'm technically not in the press, but I work in a place that's a press.
Sure,
I'm in marketing. But also, I don't think he would like where I work very much.
So yeah, probably not.
And I was joking around the whole night, as a matter of fact. Not the whole night, but a couple people. I'm like, hey, they're like, what do you do? And I said, okay. And I don't mind saying it here. I work at TMZ.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, and I'm are you here to cover Bruce? And I'm like, no. The only way we'd probably cover Bruce is if he killed somebody or went on a rant on stage or like did something wild. Then, yes, we would cover him. We look for the drama.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And by the way, it's the day after OJ died. Man, that's what we're covering all 24/7.
I bet you are.
Oh, that was a fun day.
Hey, did you say that you thought that when Bruce is on stage, he reminded you of OJ a little bit? Didn't you tell me that?
Did I say that?
Because didn't you say he was killing it?
Oh,
I've been trying to tell that joke to somebody today. Go ahead, continue. So you're with Bruce.
Me. That's good. I hope that. Oh yes, Bruce was killing it. And later acquitted of any crimes.
Exactly.
Because it was such a good music performance. Exactly. No civil lawsuits in the future, like OJ, where he was found guilty of murdering those two people.
Exactly.
100% though. But I was in the proximity of Bruce, and basically he'd come out a little later and he had changed clothes. He was probably like in a t-shirt and kind of like a zip up hoodie type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Bruce is a small man.
Mm-hmm.
Do we know that? I think we know that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. He is a pretty short guy.
He's not as short as Dio, I would imagine.
Yeah. But, I think even Mini Me was taller than Dio.
Oh.
No, I'm not here to.
He certainly is now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Actually, no. I'm sorry. Mini-Me's dead too. Damn it.
Oh, yeah. Well,
darn
it.
They're on
level ground now. So
yes. I'm not a tall man, by the way. Unfortunately, but I was taller than Bruce.
Sure.
And
sure.
He's got an elfin quality to him because he's slight. You know, he's athletic in his own way, but he's not brawny. He's not shouldered. You know, he's not like, there's short guys who are built like tanks. He's not one.
Yeah.
You know, and so he's lithe. And I'd say, you know, but anyway, he came out and someone was putting on a bracelet on his arm, like a friendship bracelet, like a certain artist we know.
Yeah.
Friendship bracelets, right?
Yeah.
And who's that artist?
It's Taylor Swift, of course.
Of course. And so here's what Smart Chip decided to say at that point. I don't think it was that bad.
I've been waiting to hear this.
It really wasn't that much. But somebody's putting on the bracelet and I'm within proximity of him and I go, oh, watch out. Are you going to turn into Taylor Swift? And he just kind of looked and then he didn't say anything.
You should have said, hey, I know you're not funny. That's funny. You can laugh.
I know. And you know what else I would have asked him? It would have been better. I'd have been like, hey, man, how come you're not at Coachella? That would have been the best. I wish I would have asked that because it was such not his vibe.
Yeah.
He would have looked at me like I was the crazy. I did ask that to the bassist, Tanya, as a joke and slash flirting with her, I think. Although she's vegan, and man, could you – it'd be hard to be with a vegan full-time because I might offend them with my eating habits. But I did joke with her like, oh, man, wouldn't you rather be at Coachella? She's like, F no, mate. You know, whatever she said. However she said it in her Irish accent.
That's funny.
So that's not their vibe. No, they wanted to be at the Whiskey A Go-Go, and that's where I was there.
Yeah.
And, yeah, the night started to wind down then, and, you know, I was up there. You know, lights had come on. People are still milling around. And at this point, Bruce was doing selfies with certain people. But, again, they were in that VIP area, so I think if you're there, it's a little bit more respected.
Sure.
And I – at some point, he wasn't there anymore. The wife wasn't there anymore. But, you know, a few of the band members were. And basically, you know, you could tell things were winding down. And that's when I decided to head out front. Mm-hmm. to, and I walked out with the people I had met. And at the chatting it up with people. Like I told you earlier, some younger musician type guys. Yeah. Chatting them up, giving them advice. You know, you could tell.
Sure.
And like, oh, I was talking about how they have to think about marketing. And it's just amazing to see the man obviously is good at what he does, and he probably has instinctively smart ideas on how to become famous, even in a rock field, which is not the height of music right now.
Yeah.
He could probably still help any band do better, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so I thought that was really cool to have met him and just know that's such a part of Maiden history. And obviously besides Bruce, he's the most well-known person in the room, at least to me and Maiden fans.
Absolutely.
Even though he's not a household name or a face, or you know, I didn't ask for a selfie from him, put it that way.
so as your night winds down and you end up, you know, going home and everything, and like, how would you rate your night on a scale of 1 to 10?
Oh no, it was a 10 night.
Awesome.
For sure. I can't think of anything better. And as a matter of fact, I wasn't that deaf from the show too. The sound is good, but not deafening there.
Okay.
I don't like to put in earplugs and stuff like that. I just go raw, and I didn't come home deaf or anything like that. So no, that was great. Again, the crowd was really good too, and I think it was just a good mix of people who either were respectful of Bruce, been longtime fans, or in the industry and just not that wound up. But I thought that was great.
Yeah,
you know, I'm really glad they did the shows because, you know, I thought having their first shows be in Anaheim was sort of like, okay, why would you do it there?
Mm-hmm.
It's much smarter of him to do it here. And I'm sure, I haven't looked at the articles yet, but I'm sure all the Blabbermouth, Loudwire, all the metal websites have covered it, right?
Oh,
and
sure.
They probably had professional video. I definitely know some of the professional video people that were there were from those outlets because they got to stand on the stairwell. There's a stairwell where if you could stand there the whole show, you'd have the best view. And so they let those guys stand there, and every so often they let really hot girls stand there.
Sure.
And then they'll chase them off, but for the most part, if you're a hot girl, especially with a group of old people like the crowd, they're gonna definitely let you stand there. And then if you're like a professional type, they'll let you stand there. And every once in a while, as a regular person, you can stand there for maybe a good 2 to 3 minutes, and then they'll shoo you off.
Sure.
That's kind of how that works. You know, you got to kind of almost keep moving at a show like that, which can be tiring.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not a type of person who's just gonna stand in one spot. Especially my first view of the stage was behind this pole. There's like a pole that's in the middle, or like a beam, I-beam. And so the first videos I took were kind of you see people coming in and out of that beam.
Yeah.
And then I went upstairs where you had a good view, but the problem was all the balcony area was kind of like you'd be 4 or 5 people deep in the balcony.
Yeah.
And if you're not a tall guy, you're kind of screwed. So then I went down to that bathroom area where from the side of the stage, it was the mixing board. And that's a pretty good place, actually, to feel really close to the band and to also see how the crowd is reacting. And that's the videos showing the crowd singing along.
I saw that.
And that's where you really got the sense also almost how the band feels, meaning this is close as you can get to what the band's view is of the audience.
Yeah.
And so you're looking out at this crowd above and below you, and it's small and intimate. It's like right in your face. Like if you're Bruce Dickinson, these people are 3 feet from you, maybe, you know, the people in the front area. Unlike even the smallest of stages in theaters, there's usually that barrier where the bodyguards stand.
Right.
Or not bodyguards, the defense staff. There's none of that.
Yeah.
So you're looking into the eyes of people directly and vice versa. So if you're at that level, which I'm not, you know, at that close,
sure,
you're looking into the eyes of Bruce Dickinson or whoever you see there. And Yeah, so that's just an amazing to be there at that vibe. And I guess here's the closest thing I think of it. It's the closest thing to having like gone back in time and seen Iron Maiden in a small place, I suppose.
Sure.
Now, however, I wouldn't be surprised if Iron Maiden one day for their final tours does a series of small club venues, like secret show type things.
That would be neat. That would be neat. Oh my God.
And we would have no chance of getting in.
Well, you know, Steve Harris does all of his yes. British Lions stuff, and they play pretty small places too. So,
do they do any Iron Maiden songs in their sets?
No, I don't. Not that I'm aware of.
He has the rights to. I mean, if anybody does.
Yeah, I don't think any. I mean, I saw Adrian Smith and Richie Kotzen in Vegas a few years back, and they did do Wasted Years. So,
which I thought, did they do more than Wasted Years or just that?
That's all they did. That's all.
For some reason, I thought they did more than that. Okay, got it.
They did a solo song from Richie Kotzen, and then they did a song from Adrian Smith's past. So,
who's doing Black Bart Blues live?
maybe an obscure cover band.
Like, isn't that the worst song? A friend was asking me about that the other day. They thought it was on Bruce's solo album, Tattooed Millionaire. But no, that was a B-side. If I remember, it was one of the worst B-sides.
I think that's better than anything on just about anything I'm better than on Tattooed Millionaire.
That's so funny, man. But yeah, that was the night, and I'll be very curious to see, you know, what online reactions are. But that was my point, that they do this for the press. They do this for the fans, sure. Of course, yes. But nowadays in 2024, your fans can be anywhere in the world and experience this, you know, and see the videos and all this. But also they look for the headlines. You know, Bruce Dickinson unleashes tour at his historic L.A. venue. You know?
That's absolutely.
A couple things to print. And that's why, frankly, I think, Bruce, this might be controversial. I think for the sake of the headline, and really, I work at a news place, headlines carry traffic and carry attention.
Oh, yeah.
Even if it's just for a 24-hour period, you always look for what the headline can be.
Yeah.
I think a headline like, Bruce Dickinson plays rare Power Slave cover at Solo Lawn.
Yeah.
Ever pick your song. That would be worth, if I was his publicist, I would be on my knees and say, just think about it, mate. Just think about it for one show, not the tour.
Yeah.
These shows. Give me that headline of Bruce plays an Iron Maiden song. Anyway, but it did not happen. But I would have thought it would have been very smart if he would have done that.
Yeah, I think Bruce is too hard-headed to do that. And I think but I think he's hard-headed in that way, he's hard-headed in a respectable way that he's like, I'm going to do the things my way. You know,
of course.
And I definitely don't think he wants to include Iron Maiden in any of this. You know.
Now, do you think if he's doing small shows in London, he's going to get Steve or anyone to, attend or show up on stage?
I don't really think he would.
Not even attend?
I know that Nico played at one show of the Smith Kotzen thing. I know he showed up and played because he played one song on their album. And he showed up and played that with them. But I don't know. I think, you know, Steve's going to be doing his thing. And I think the guys are just probably having a break from one another. So I don't really see. I could see maybe them showing up and just watching the show.
That's what I wanted to ask you. What about that? You think they some would show up to see the show, or they'd say, no. We're too busy.
Either that, or I could see them just saying, you know, I don't want to steal the spotlight. You know, they're very low key guys.
That is true.
So.
What if Blaze Bailey goes? And he's there to fill in case Bruce gets sick.
He's going to fill in for a couple of songs, and then Bruce will be like, no, I want to come back now. So,
by the way, I think your idea expressed the other day that Blaze Bailey opening for Iron Maiden would be so...
It would just be awesome.
Get the fans so much, you know, and they're good. And it's not like they disavow the Blaze era either.
Yeah.
A lot of those decisions, my understanding is, the opening acts really depends on their management companies. Yeah. And as we know, the management companies of 2020's metal is not the same level they were in the 80s in terms of who they can pick and who they can select. So I think a lot of times they're pressured to take on bands that we haven't heard of that somebody thinks could generate new marketing opportunities, like The Who, but oftentimes they don't. And oftentimes we look back on it and it's like, you know, but also they look at it this way. Iron Maiden's going to still sell out. We don't
exactly.
need to draw. Back in the day when we used to see shows, I think in the early or late 80s, when I started seeing shows, I always thought the second act really helped drive demand.
Yeah, you know, I agree.
Like Kiss and Anthrax? Oh my gosh.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, cool.
That was a weird mix. And then the very first show I ever saw was Whitesnake and Motley Crue. And at that time, Whitesnake was top of the charts.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? And then I saw Tesla and Def Leppard.
Sure. Sure.
Amazing.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what I would prefer, like two nice names that I'm familiar with that I could just go and have a good time instead of going, okay, well, here's one band that I'm going to stand and watch just because they're here. I could care less if they were here or not. So.
The most recent one I had of that was Queensryche and Judas Priest.
Yeah, yeah,
and same I think here. You said you would have liked that order reversed.
You know, I mean, obviously, Queensryche wouldn't usurp Priest because of Priest's legacy.
No, but as a preference, I meant.
I just,
like,
yeah.
As a more time on stage, and I agree with you, I think maybe the more time on stage, Queensryche could have certainly had it at that show.
You know, I saw Kiss one time where it was just Kiss. It was a small venue that they were doing. It was a random show because they were opening a restaurant or something in an area, and they just said, okay, we're going to come do one random show at this casino hall. And it was like a 2,500 seater, small place. Took me and my son, and just no opening act. It was just,
wow.
Showtime came and it was Kiss and it was perfect. I was like, I could go for that.
Wait, was that during the non-makeup era? The end of that?
No. That would have been in 2000, say.
Oh, so it was just them by themselves with makeup, though.
Yeah, it was 2014 or 15.
Who can open for them, you know, in a way at that time? And also, they used to kind of look at it this way. We want to make sure people are at this arena spending money on concessions for 4 hours. So who can we book early? Whereas I think with Kiss, I don't know how many hours they played, but maybe people get there early anyway just to kind of experience it's almost like a Kiss convention.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
just so you kind of don't need that opening band to get people there to buy drinks and beers and, you know, pay for parking and all that sort of stuff. It was a fantastic thing. And honestly, you know, going to a small venue like this is the Whiskey, it definitely is a fun experience.
Oh, yeah.
If you get the chance to go, most likely if you're in L.A., you're going to get the chance to see one of these, like, fake metal bands or spoof metal bands. And it's probably a fun time. Every so often they'll have, and I'll just tell you, you know, kind of ending who I've seen at the Whiskey before. Dokken with George Lynch. So Dokken has been without George Lynch for years, but they had a couple shows where they came back together. And Dokken plays at the Whiskey a lot, and of course did in the 80s. So that was kind of really cool to see that. But let's just face it, Don Dokken is not the man he once was.
Sure.
Vocalist. This was in 2022. I also saw Jeff Tate. Cool. On the tour in 2022, and he sounded great. He had a young band, and what's funny is this is the first time yesterday at the Bruce Dickinson show, the first time I've seen like a big drum set at the Whiskey for a while, because usually it's like an electronic drum set, if that's the right word for it.
Sure.
It's like those thin pads, and that's what I saw Jeff Tate's band play.
Okay.
And it definitely was lacking when they're playing some of those Mindcrime songs.
Yeah.
It's not only is it not Scott Rockenfeld, but it's not even a drum set. But last night, the drummer, Dave Moreno, did have a full, big drum set.
Okay.
And I think that, you know, you'd probably know the new album better than me. Are the drums stand out in that? I don't really remember, but I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and say he's a great drummer.
Yeah. It's just solid. I mean, I think everybody on that album is solid, so.
They have to be, right?
Yeah.
But then also, and you and I talked about this, I saw Metal Church in 2019, and that was a fantastic show. And I forgot some other metal bands were there that day.
Mm-hmm.
Other ones, even bigger than them, quote unquote, but I think it was a new metal band, and I left, frankly, after Metal Church, and they played early, like 6 o'clock at night.
Oh, nice.
Like the sun wasn't even down yet.
Yeah.
And I ran into Mike Howe. Yes, man. And at first I didn't know he was the singer, right? Because in my mind, I'm picturing Mike Howe from the late 90s with his long blonde hair.
Mm-hmm.
Late 80s, long blonde hair.
Yeah.
And so I see this guy, kind of looks like me, like my age, short hair. We're both wearing like a leather jacket and like a nicer shirt underneath it, not band stuff.
Sure.
And he's going up the stairs, I'm going downstairs, and I kind of look him up and down. I'm like, oh, okay. And then I see him on stage a minute or two later. I'm like, oh, that's the guy from Metal Church.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
And of course, you know, I know you saw that tour. I think you said you saw him three or four times. Rest in peace to that man. But
yeah.
I was happy to have seen them, and they sounded so good.
Mm-hmm.
So good. And I had just gotten back into Metal Church when I went to that show in 2019 and just re-reminded myself of the power of those albums. And wow.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was all at the Whiskey. Great place to go if you get to see a band like that.
Yeah.
Stephen Piercy recently did a whole Out of the Cellar, played the full out. Wait, is that the first album? The first Red album. He played the whole thing on New Year's Eve at that
okay.
place. I didn't go to that, but that would have been a fun experience. Like, yeah. I could have gotten into that, sure. you know, even if they're all past their prime. As are we all, though, right? No, just kidding.
Yeah, well, we're trying not to be, but...
I don't feel that way at all. And that's the other thing, you know, going out to a show at a late night, staying up late, having some drinks, talking to people, that's just good for the soul.
Oh, yeah. It is.
It is, man. So I'm happy to have shared the story of my experience seeing Mr. Bruce Dickinson in the first night of the Mandrake Project tour. And I can't wait to see him again with Iron Maiden. Like I said, I will see him other times he plays. And honestly, I don't know his tour dates in L.A., but certainly if he comes back here with the full performance at a larger venue, I certainly will go.
Sure.
Having this experience helped me. And I think if I didn't mention it to the listeners, I paid $60 for the tickets, 60. And there was like $3.40 for fees, which isn't too bad, by the way, the fees. But yeah, $63 to see him. I did not think I'd be able to get a ticket. Lucked out online. Mm-hmm. And I'm really happy I did. And if people are, you know, I hope other people have the experience and we'll see all their content on Twitter and everything else. And yeah, man, good times. Good times.
Well, I appreciate you coming on here and sharing it because, like I said, there's only 800 people or so that got to be at that first show. You know, mm-hmm. it was kind of short notice. You know, it was only a few days ahead, and like mm-hmm. I said, they did it the old-fashioned way. You know, you either had to buy them day of or box office, so scalpers didn't have months to sit on them and make it unaffordable, but. But that's really cool, and I do appreciate you coming on here. So, man, thank you very much.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You got it, Uncle Steve.
Thank you. Slow.